Before we begin, Simran and I would like to acknowledge that we're recording this on the unceded land of First Nations people. Simran's recording from her home on the land of the Combomary people of the Yugambeh language group, and I'm recording from my home on the land of the Bunurong people of the Kulin Nations. We'd both like to acknowledge and pay our respects to First Nations elders past and present, and extend that respect to any First Nations listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
I'm Ryan Hamilton.
And I'm Simran Pasricha.
And this is the podcast for Burnt Out Divas.
Trying to stay
broadly relevant.
Hey Ryan, what's something new that you've experienced?
Homemade pickles. Have you tried homemade pickles?
Oh my god, my housemate makes them and it's a grand old time.
They are so good. I had a friend come over for a burger night and we just had their homemade pickles. I made burgers, they brought pickles. It was great.
Wow.
Love a homemade pickle.
It is great. That's beautiful.
How about you?
I haven't experienced this yet, but I'm experiencing a colonoscopy tomorrow and that's very new.
Well, good luck with that one.
So excited. Stay tuned. Watch this space, you guys.
Broadly cultured.
Shall we start with the Sabrina Carpenter album cover?
Yes, let's. Lots to say here.
So she's just dropped a new album cover for her upcoming album, which is titled Man's Best Friend. And the photo was taken by Bryce Anderson, who's an American queer photographer who sort of like creates a lot of self-portrait imagery, exploring gender and stuff. And this photo depicts Sabrina on all fours in like a pencil skirt. I don't know how to describe clothes. Mm-hmm. with her hair being held by a man just out of frame, like she's a dog sort of petting at his legs. And it's broken the internet.
Mm-hmm. It sure has. You describing her as a dog petting the legs was crazy.
I hated that. The album is titled Man's Best Friend.
That's true. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Clocking in on that one. Yeah, it definitely has broken the internet. It's really divided people in how they've like taken this. And as a person who's been a Sabrina fan for like since like Eyes Wide Open or like I like really like before her Girl Meets World phase, like I've been with her in her baby albums, it's also divided me as well. And in the deep dive, we kind of like bring her up because we recorded this deep dive a couple weeks ago, but she's a person that we bring up and she has done a lot in terms of like being super open about her like sexuality and like whatever she wants to do within her music. And I think that's really powerful. But do you want to say a little bit about why people are not vibing with this album cover?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the criticism centers around like the way, well, for let's quote Glasgow Women's Aid, a Scotland-based advocacy organization for women experiencing domestic abuse. They slammed Carpenter in a post on Instagram calling the cover regressive and saying that it evokes tired tropes that reduce women to pets, props, and possessions and promotes an element of violence and control, which I do think is completely accurate, but I also think she's intentionally doing that. And then I guess I've seen a lot of discourse which is like, yeah, I'm sure it is an ironic album cover and she is very self-consciously playing with sort of like the depictions of women in mass media, but at the same time she's not really subverting it, she's just doing it and saying she's doing it while she's doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Sabrina does have a very like dry sense of humor and is quite like sarcastic and like satirical with like the, even like the music videos that she's like done in the past.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, she loves a like subverting like a rom-com trope, let's say. But in this situation, I've seen a lot of people be like, oh yeah, it could be satire, but in the current like political climate, like there are too many people that won't take it as satire and it's like too, it's not obvious enough to be like satire. Yeah. In a way that it's like helpful to the movement or like we understand where your place is on the whole situation, you know, like from Sabrina Carpenter's sake. And I think that can be harmful in a way. It's unfortunate. Yeah. That like we have to consider this at all, you know. I think like in a perfect like utopian world, like do what you want, like express your sexuality in whatever form, like there are like certain like kink communities as well that have come out and say like you know you shouldn't be like yucking anybody's yum and how they'd like to like portray their sexuality, but we don't live in that world. And I think like getting rid of that context is comes like from a place of privilege and should have been thought out in a manner.
Yeah.
It gives very much like the Disney girls like going bad, like when like Miley Cyrus did like her Can't Be Tamed era, you know.
Yes.
But this is definitely taking it to, but but I think the environment that we're in definitely adds to this conversation.
Yeah. But then I'm also like, because everyone's like, oh, you know, how could Sabrina not think about it? And I'm like, Sabrina knew this was going to attract controversy when she posted it. Like,
that's true.
You know, I think for all the discourse around it, all it's doing is just advertising her upcoming album, which is exactly what she wanted it to do.
Yeah, there is this theory going around that, like, when the actual album comes out, that it's her holding, like, her hair, like in a Taylor Swift kind of,
yeah,
I'll be the man kind of vibes, you know.
If that's the case, I'm all on board.
I'll be interested to see the album come out. I'm like sat for it. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like she's a fairly politically progressive person in a pop star way, in the Taylor Swift way, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Look, it's an interesting situation. I think we've said everything.
That's so right. Speaking of politics, let's take it over to Canada, where politician Jagmeet Singh has beef with Drake now, which is just maybe my favorite sentence I've ever said on here. Jagmeet Singh is a politician in Canada, and he recently went to a Kendrick Lamar concert, and Drake wasn't too impressed. If you don't know, Drake and Kendrick have hardcore ongoing beef. We have an episode about that that we can link down below, and you can go get into it. But the way that Drake dissed Jagmeet was kind of hilarious, because he posted like a screenshot of, well, first his like first few stories were at an Indian wedding. I don't know why, but a lot of people like in like the Desi like South Asian discourse were like, that was on purpose that he posted that he was in an Indian wedding and then shouted out like and came for Jagmeet Singh, who is also Indian Punjabi. And I was like, okay, whatever, sure. I feel like that might be a stretch, but okay. Because I think people were like,
you can't criticize him because he went to a Desi wedding.
No, literally. I think it was like, okay, people were saying that Drake was trying to like cover his bases of being like, I'm still for Indian people, but I'm mad at Jagmeet Singh.
Not all Indian people. Not just all this Indian. One man.
Yeah, exactly. And so Drake posted a screenshot of like DMs between Jagmeet and himself. And it's like, just like, you know, follows and things like that. And one message from Jagmeet in October 7, 2019 says, honored, thanks for the follow, brother. And then they have like a few like mentions and stories. And then on the weekend, Drake just sends him a message saying, you're a goof. And everyone is like, what the fuck? Which I think is so funny. Anyways, recently, actually like literally like this morning, Jagmeet posted on his Instagram story. He says, it's so dramatic. It's like this black Instagram story with just like text. It's like, so it's giving Notes app apology energy, but it says, I went for SZA, not Kendrick. I was born in this city. I love this city. And then he goes on to say, but real talk, I get it. I shouldn't have gone at all. OVO and Drake have lifted up this city and Canada. For me, it'll always be Drake over Kendrick. And I was like, whoa.
Wait.
That's big tea.
Wait. Jagmeet said that?
Yeah, he said that.
Drake over Kendrick.
Yeah.
What?
Isn't that wild? Anyways, my dog is at my door. One moment. Yeah, so anyways, that was crazy.
No, I'm like, why are we supporting Drake? I thought we canceled him quite definitively a year ago.
I don't know. I guess Canadians have loyalty to the six, you know?
Yeah, but it's Drake.
I know.
Did you see Kendrick announce tour dates in Australia?
Yeah, he sure did.
Is this old news? I just saw a poster of it at Flinders Street and I was like,
oh. No, very exciting. And if any sponsors out there want to give us tickets for the show, we'll be there.
We're the people to commentate on that.
Yeah,
I think.
And we are Kendrick over Drake. Let's be clear. Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I'm whoever succeeded Jagmeet Singh as the leader of the new Democratic Party over Jagmeet Singh.
I think I still like Jagmeet Singh, but I don't really know. I just see his reels a lot and they capture me, but I don't know much about him.
Well, and he got in trouble last year for yelling at some racist people outside the Canadian Parliament.
People need to stop getting in trouble for that.
But then everyone told, like, all the media was like, how could he yell at them? They were just holding up racist signs. And I'm like,
that old chestnut.
I'm like, let him speak.
Yeah. Period. Anyways, lots to say. Maybe we'll do a deep dive on him one day. Probably not, but could be.
Who knows? Like a about it. Yeah. No, because fuck Australian politics. I think we need to cover Canadian politics.
Well, you know what's so funny? I was at a wedding recently, and there were Canadians from there, and they actually said that they listened to our podcast, which was so exciting. We always have two Canadians on our like listening.
Jagmeet Singh deep dive coming soon.
Yeah. Hey, not all Indians are the same, Ryan. Okay.
Yeah. I'm aware.
And Drake went to an Indian wedding, okay?
Yeah.
I want to clarify, it wasn't the same wedding. I know everybody out to. Here was thinking that. Yeah.
You met Drake at an Indian wedding.
Yeah. Moving on. Recently, there was a Pedro Pascal lookalike contest in New York, which, come on, guys, let's get with the time. All right, what's up with that? I feel like that's so, like, we are so past the lookalike contests of it all. That was so last year. And I'm assuming that it was set up by, I haven't done any research in this one. This one is completely.
You just have a bone to pick.
I just have a bone to pick, which is so funny because I'm like, oh, I'm assuming that the PR coordinated this. I don't know this at all for a fact. Let me look this up. I'm pausing for a moment. Okay, I'll chat while this loads. But essentially, Pedro Pascal is in a new movie with Dakota Johnson and Chris Evans. It's called The Materialists. It's giving rom-com energy. I would say more rom than com from the trailer. I haven't looked at it. I haven't watched it yet. But I've heard a lot of like mixed reviews. I was looking at NPR and the movie is by Celine Song, which is the same person behind Past Lives. And I loved Past Lives. Did you watch that?
No.
Okay. That's insane. I think you'd love it. Okay. Anyways, the movie Materialist is about a matchmaker in like New York City's like most desperate and wealthy marriage seekers.
Past Lives.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, but I've read the entire Wikipedia page.
And that's the same thing, is the thing. Yeah. Yeah. That was a really, really good movie. It made me feel so many things. And every time I rewatch it, it like makes me feel more, which is why I say that I think The Materialist is more romantic drama than rom-com. And I think maybe people going into it thought it would be a rom-com because it like, you know, the trope is very much like one girl, two guys, like who will she pick? That energy, you know? Anyways, the two guys are Pedro Pascal and Chris Evans. And I thought it was interesting. Okay, so the NPR review was like, okay, totally. It's the kind of story where hardened cynics like Lucy, which is Okay, so the movie is basically so Chris Evans is like the poorer guy and Pedro Pascal is like the richer guy. And I really like this quote from NPR because it says, it's easy enough to understand Song's impulse to write something like Materialist, to question what we value and how we perceive our own value, and to do so through characters who think and speak so clinically of partnering as if it were an equation to be solved. Yet even if the intent, as it seems to be, is to ultimately critique such meticulous calculations, the conclusion's inevitability ends up cynical and regressively binary anyhow, which I think really ate down this this movie. And I've seen a lot of like TikToks being like, okay, after this like poor man propaganda, especially in this economic climate, they have had to like go and like watch, like Chuck Bass and like Nate on Gossip Girl, because I would take the rich man too. I don't know what the fuck happens in this movie, so I can't really be saying anything, but all I know is that the PR is behind on this lookalike contest, even though it was on Father's Day, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, that's
Pedro on Father's Day. That's correct, because he is zaddy. But anyways, that's my tea.
No, because like the
rom-com? Sorry,
I was gonna say the CIA did. No, I'm not gonna make the joke.
No, say it.
I was gonna like list three conspiracy theories and then be like, and the PR did the lookalike contest.
You have to keep all of this in.
Anywho, what have I watched rom-coms?
Yeah,
was that the question?
In your
not
time.
Really.
That's actually wild. What's your favorite genre?
Dramedy.
Totally. That's so you. Because yeah. Romantic relationships are not the primary relationship in your life.
No, exactly. But I do like Normal People. Is that a rom-com or is that just
it's
a rom?
Definitely, I think it's just a rom. It's definitely rom, oh. Drama, sadness, despair.
Oh,
but you can't put
rama
hyphen. You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's tea. I don't know what my favorite rom-com is, but I'm a rom-com rom-com girl.
Yeah.
Like, through and through. I would consider the Barbie original, like, movies rom-coms.
Is the new Barbie a rom-com?
No.
Okay.
Because it's about, that's a non, that's a drama, that's a drama.
That's a dramedy.
Yeah. Okay, speaking of dramedies, let's move on to the news, shall we?
Broadly News.
Hey, so it's actually been like an exhausting week. There has been so much happening.
I'm so tired.
Let's start with Iran. You probably have heard about this, but... over the weekend, on Friday, Israel launched a preemptive attack on Iran, using fighter jets and drones to bomb dozens of sites across the capital city, Tehran. They said it was targeting nuclear facilities and military locations. And in that attack, 78 people were killed, with a focus on senior Iranian military personnel, nuclear scientists, and children. 320 people were injured. It's interesting that Israel chose to describe that attack as preemptive, because that's not a thing. That's just an attack. You can't preemptively, it's still an attack, you know, famously. And the last time Iran launched a missile attack on Israel was in October, which was in retaliation for Israel assassinating military figures in Tehran. At that point, Iran gave Israel advance warning, and there's not been any reports that Iran was necessarily planning an attack in this case. So this suggestion that it was preemptive is another case of Israel just trying to play the media to try and justify their bloodlust and warmongering spirits. But it's not really great. Sort of the whole context is that there's... some countries in the world that have nuclear weapons, which is Russia, the US, China, France, the UK, Pakistan, India, Israel, and North Korea. Israel has never officially announced that they do have nuclear weapons. They've been very coy about the whole thing, but there's knowledge that they have nuclear weapons. Iran isn't on the list, but since the 50s, they've been running a nuclear enrichment program where they've been developing the capacity and the technology to, you know, either do nuclear power or convert that into nuclear weapons. So they definitely possibly might have the capacity to build nuclear weapons in the future. But at present, it doesn't seem like that they do. And so that context is sort of why Israel did that attack. I'm going to cut the sentence I just said then. What's been happening this year is that Iran and the US have been negotiating for a peace agreement that would allow Iran to continue its nuclear programs under certain conditions. And those talks were meant to resume on the weekend. But because of the attack that Israel launched on Iran, Israel obviously being aligned with the US, Iran has backed out of the talks and said they're not going to do them. And Benjamin Netanyahu, head of Israel, has said that they don't want the talks happening because, well, broadly, Israel doesn't want peace in the region. And it's a lot easier to attack someone if you let them do things to antagonize you, which is what Israel has a penchant for doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not a great situation. And I was like on Al Jazeera, and then it was like 5 minutes ago, Iran launched more strikes on Israel, which that's been a retaliatory strike. A lot of the missiles that Iran has been firing on Israel have been shot down by the Iron Dome being Israel's technology to shoot down missiles in the air before they land in Israel. But some have been getting through and hitting targets within Israel. So it's just like, stop fighting, you know?
Yeah, stop fighting indeed.
Anything to add, Simran?
Yeah, no. There is much to add on that one. I think the way that I've been digesting these like news in general has been incredibly dystopian recently, especially when you like go on your For You page and your like starts with like, you know, like protests and like human rights violations, which we'll get into in a moment. And then it goes to like a get ready with me. And then I saw a woman in Lebanon having a wedding and there were like missiles coming down as well. So it's just, it's a scary, scary, scary time. And I'm not really 100% sure what to say about it, but it's not great. You know, I don't know if there's much to say.
No, there's not much to say. I just hate it because like, you know, all the comment sections are all like World War III. And I'm like, I don't like this at all.
I saw this video of being like, you know, when people say like, oh, men used to go to war. Men used to go to war. Men are, I think, going to war. Yeah. Which, okay, I'm going to get into this next story because I think it like leads in well. Okay. So speaking of warmongering, let's talk about America, shall we? So lots happening in America recently. Let's take it back to last weekend when mass protests erupted after a surge of ICE raids happened in Los Angeles. This, of course, sprouted protests across the city, peaceful, might I add. This then prompted Donald Trump to get like scared and annoyed, and deployed the National Guard to Los Angeles. This is a really big deal because, first of all, there were peaceful protests. Second of all, this is the first time in decades that the National Guard has been activated in California without the governor's request. So Trump posted on his Truth Social platform, which you have to like write about these things for work a lot of the time. And I hate going on Truth Social. It is truly the most like...
Do you have an account?
No, I don't. Of course not. But like having to just like even go on there is just a scary, spooky time. And Trump posted, if Governor Gavin Newsom of California and Mayor Karen Bass of Los Angeles can't do their jobs, which everyone knows they can't, then the federal government will step in and solve the problem, riots and looters, the way it should be solved. Anyways, he just went like on this mass like rampage basically, and then the governor were like, okay, then we'll sue you guys for doing that because that's like not constitutional, like for coming in like without the permission of the governor. Things really escalated when the National Guard got involved, and the governor said the same. He was like, everything was fine until Trump got involved. And we saw like journalists being like shot at with rubber bullets. It was like very scary times. Then we moved to this past Saturday, and Trump decided to host a military parade, and it coincided with his birthday. And basically, I think like in the United States, it's like, I mean, it's pretty obvious like what he's been doing. He wanted a parade for himself, and he was like, oh, but we're not gonna like, you know, make it obvious because it's giving North Korea. Okay, that's what they do there. And that's my tea on that. But yeah, anyways, so that was his plan. And so he got his like parade going. It was very embarrassing seeing all of like the videos of it because he like planned this huge parade and like musical artists and things like that. And it kind of like looked like a music festival. And you can hear like these tanks like rolling through the street and like squeaking with their noises, and there's nobody in the crowd. It's so embarrassing. Meanwhile, across the nation, there's like tens of thousands of people showing up for protests on what they're calling No King's Day. And it's basically just like saying like, you know, we don't want like the monarchy here, which is what Trump is turning America into with his power. And it took place against like, you know, a lot of like intensifying fears of like political violence. Because there was also like two Democratic politicians and their spouses who were shot in Minnesota hours before the rally by people who pretended to be police officers. Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. And so, yeah, 10K people showed up all over America for these No King protests. It's nice to see, obviously the whole situation is fucked, but it is nice to see people out on the streets like this now, you know, and like actually like using their voices and protesting. And I'm hoping that this momentum goes forward. But I do fear for people because a lot of, you know, black and brown people are like on the streets, and they're the ones that are being like targeted by ICE, whether or not they even like have like documentation or not. Like obviously like defund ICE and like get rid of it, and it's like a fucked thing. But, you know, it's like they're not even doing their job right. If they wanted to do their job, whatever, but then they're not even doing it. Like they're getting just like random people who aren't criminals and first of all, not having documentation isn't a criminal act. It's just like so, so bizarre. We're kind of like keeping track on what the situation is going on, but there's still protests going on in LA. There have been people that have been shot, and tear gas has been used and rubber bullets have been used. It's very, very scary, scary.
And the police are the ones escalating in most cases.
Absolutely.
Like, a Australian reporter was shot.
Yeah, by a rubber bullet.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
And then on video, it's like the cop just turns to her and shoots her.
You can see.
And then all the media is like, caught in the crossfire. And I'm like, that's not what crossfire means.
It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. It's very, I was like reporting on it like live, I would say. It was a very wild day because it was the Greta Thunberg situation going on, which,
yeah,
if you don't know, and thank God we put her in Broadly Diva because that she is. But she was on an aid boat with a bunch of other activists as well trying to reach Gaza, and that got intercepted. And at the same time, the LA protests were happening, and it was just, and this past few weeks have been incredibly turbulent and exhausting. But I think, although I've had like spoken to some people, and a lot of people are kind of like shutting off their like news and like not engaging, this is the time to engage. Like, this is the time to like,
amen,
keep going. Yeah. So just a little reminder, just a little PSA. We'll put some links in the bio. I think also, like, if you feel a bit helpless, like, looking at this from afar, obviously things are happening in America, but you can still, like, support them from afar with, like, funds and, like, immigration lawyers who are trying, like, to do the right thing. So I found some links. Okay, what else is happening, Ryan?
I don't know why you had to ask it in that excited tone.
Totally.
The largest commercial aviation disaster.
Oh my god, why did I ask about it in that tone?
I know.
I don't know why. I forgot what we were doing next.
The worst commercial aviation disaster in the past decade has occurred. Mm. It happened in Ahmedabad, India, when the Air India flight AI-171 crashed 22 seconds after taking off from the airport, killing 265 people, which is everyone on board minus one. There was one survivor, and it's unclear how he managed, but that happened. It was a Boeing 787-8 Dreamliner. You might know Boeing being in the news recently for consistently making really shitty airplanes that keep crashing in unique ways. The Boeing 737 MAX 8 controversy a couple years ago being a massive one where they were just, you know, designed to fall out of the sky. That's obviously hyperbole, but also accurate. It's unclear at present why the plane crashed, but I read this really interesting article from the American Prospect talking about some whistleblowers that they chatted to that worked at the assembly plant in Charleston, North Carolina. Sorry, South Carolina, my bad. Obviously, in the past, there's been, there was that whistleblower, John Barnett, who died last March in the middle of a three-day deposition whistleblowing about ways that he tried to, you know, hold Boeing to account as a quality manager at the Dreamliner's final assembly plant. Other sort of whistleblowers who've spoken to Prospect were talking about particular quality concerns that they had over planes that were delivered to Air India. So Cynthia Kitchens, a former quality manager who worked at the Charleston plant between 2009 and 2016, has a binder full of notes, documents, and photos from her frustrating years of Boeing, one page of which lists the numbers of the 11 planes delivered between early 2012 and late 2013, whose quality defects most kept her awake at night. Six of those planes went to Air India. And the plane that crashed was delivered in January 2014 from that assembly line. There was also a camera crew from Al Jazeera, this is in the past, who went to that plant in Charleston to investigate sort of what was going on and the culture there. And there was undercover footage filmed where an assembly line worker wore a hidden camera and chatted to his colleagues. And all of them said that they would never allow their family members to fly on one of the planes that the factory was producing. And Cynthia Kitchens went on to say that years earlier when she had asked a boss if she would let his children fly on a plane with the litany of flaws and non-conformances that he was urging her to just ignore. He said to her that, Cindy, none of these planes are staying in America. They're all going overseas, which is just a frankly horrific thing to say. And frankly horrific that we've, you know, known about these like quality assurance issues, but these things still get shipped out. And it's just like really horrible. Obviously, we don't know like what actually caused this plane to crash, but it's like this is like a systemic issue of planes being manufactured by this company. And it's like maybe we should not endanger people's lives and especially not just like ship faulty planes overseas because Americans won't die on them. Mm-hmm. It's like that is so cruel. But
yeah, truly cruel. And I think I think I saw one TikTok about it, so not everybody is talking about it like this. But they were like, oh, it was contained to the plane, which, like, the casualties were contained to the plane. That's, like, not true.
No.
It crashed into a doctor's hostel in Ahmedabad. So, like, you know, there was, like, 240 casualties in this. Like, I just, yeah, the way that people are being so flippant with this coverage and with this news, I think also has to do with the fact that it was, like, in India.
Yeah.
You know? And clearly it carries into how the planes are, like, regulated. And like, the, you know, it was an afterthought that these planes are like coming to India. Like, it just, yeah, I think some more care and like compassion is necessary.
It's also like, it's not a small plane or an old plane. It's like a 10-year-old Dreamliner, like ostensibly one of the most advanced and like biggest planes in the world crashed 22 seconds into flight. Like, what's going, I feel like a conspiracy theorist. What's going on, guys?
Yeah.
And it's racism. That's what's going on.
Broadly deep.
Speaking of the America in our hearts and the America in our minds, American cultural imperialism. Let's talk about it through the lens of Benson Boone and why I fucking hate him.
Okay, let's preface this deep, okay? Because Ryde and I viscerally disagree on this situation. I'm open to hearing the argument of, like, why you hate Benson Boone. But if you have been living under a rock or you're just on a kinder part of TikTok, you might have not realized that there is, like, a insane amount of hate towards the artist Benson Boone. He's this 22-year-old kid from Utah, and he flips around a lot and wears shiny jumpsuits. That's kind of like the gist of what you need to know about him if you haven't heard of him before. Now that I've said his name like three times, Benson Boone, Benson Boone, Benson Boone, he'll show up and do a flip in your house. So like... you'll get to know it. But okay, let's start. Ryan did a lot more research about this, and I thought he wasn't taking it very seriously, so I didn't do that much. But let's start with your arguments, babe. Why do you hate him?
I mean, that's the question, isn't it? Nothing infuriates me like Benson Boone. And I was truly like, why? Why does he piss me the fuck off? And I've come up with a bunch of reasons, and they're not coherent arguments, but I'm going to monologue at you, mm-hmm. and we're going to pick through the detritus of this
okay, and then I'll tear you
cascade
down.
Of yeah, hate.
Plan.
Yeah. Where am I going to start? I think for me, one of the biggest things is that he feels so corporate and sanitized in his approach to art and art making and sort of what he as a product represents. I don't feel like he's a fun or interesting or personable person. Every time I see him, it's like, I've got to blow up this new single about milkshakes. And every time I see that, I want to vomit, you know, like I want to purge my body of Benson Boone. He doesn't feel authentic. Everything he does feels very strategic and thought through and considered. And I hate that. But there is a lot of hate that I think is unjustified towards him okay. in the sense that I think people need to think deeply about why they hate him, because there's a myriad of valid reasons.
Okay, go on, because I haven't heard one yet.
Okay. A lot of people have critiqued him for his sort of like performance style as like emulating Elton John and like Freddie Mercury, who were like, you know, like massive queer icons. And there's been a lot of discourse around the fact that like I'm not going to say he isn't queer because, you know, we don't want to pull another Kit Connor and like force a diva to come out. But there's nothing about his art that is giving queer or alternative or sitting outside the norm or questioning the world in which we live in. It's work that very much is okay with the world and is just like uncritical of it. And I think for me, that is the thing that I most hate about it, how uncritical he is of the world, you know, and all that's in it. You know, this is a diva in America in 2025 with the rise of fascism, and his album cover for his upcoming album, American Heart, is just him shirtless in front of an American flag. Like, excuse me? I read a really interesting piece which talks about the way that Beyonce was skewered for that when she did Cowboy Carter, and there was so much criticism from racists being like, oh, how dare she, you know, shit on America, but also from fellow artists like, especially Iggy Azalea Banks, criticizing her for white woman cosplay, right? And so I love Beyonce, but I'm not one to say that she's the vanguard of like radical music and like progressive art making. But I think she is more intentional and specific in her art making than what we're seeing from Benson Boone. In contrast, everyone just sees the Benson Boone American Heart thing, and it's everyone just swoons over it. And I think it's really disappointing how this uncritical white mediocrity is hailed as like good music in contrast to Cowboy Carter, which did not get its flowers, Renaissance, which did not get its flowers, Beyonce, who did not get her flowers, you know. And it's just like, why is he up there? But then also, like, musically, like, why the fuck do I hate that music? You know, what is it about me that makes me hate that music? I read a very interesting article from The Atlantic, which was written in after the Coachella performance, where he brought up Brian May from Queen, which is very much him trying to draw parallels between him and Freddie Mercury. But I'm like, we'll get to that later. And the Atlantic writer said that the value of the music of Benson Boone and also people like Alex Warren, but the value of music from Benson Boone and others like him is that it's generally its sense of anonymity. These songs are meant to stream in the background of school fundraisers and to soundtrack the social media photo montages afterwards. And there's this like real lack of personality in the art and specificity. It feels really focus grouped. And I think I hate that, you know, in like a year last year where we had Chapel Road and Charlie XCX being so insane and unhinged and specific about that, art. Why are we elevating this bland nonsense? The writer goes on to say that what really makes Benson Boone unique is a palpable mismatch between his musical style and his personal identity. Artistically, Boone's most obvious influences are the theatrical rockers of the 70s and 80s, and you can sense their teachings in his octave-climbing vocals, his plodding then prancing tempos, and his sequined chest-bearing fashion. Of course, Elton John and Freddie Mercury were hard-partying queer misfits on a mission to blow mainstream minds. Boone, by contrast, is a girl-crazed jock who doesn't drink or smoke. He writes songs about topics such as missing his late great-grandma and, as on Beautiful Things, being really grateful for the life he has. At last, glam rock about being normal. And I think that really, I was like, yeah, because it's not about a different world or a better world or about the specificity of his life. He just is regular and I don't like it, you know? I think what is exciting about music and art is like an ability to share different perspectives and different takes on things. I actually don't want to hear him say that he thanks God every day for the girl he sent my way, but I know the things he gives me, he can take away. Thank you for that, Benson Boone. I have more to say, but you can say something if you'd like, Simran.
Thank goodness, because... While I definitely see where you're coming from, okay, let's start with that. I understand that. Would I say that he's the greatest songwriter of our generation? Absolutely not. Would I compare him to Beyonce? No, I wouldn't. Also, I understand your critique, though, especially specifically with like the American flag. I also hated that. I was like, why is any, you know, like for Beyonce to put it like in her album, it was like a political statement. It had like purpose to it. Whereas with like Benson Boone, it just like felt like his record company just was like, oh yeah, take off your shirt. This is what we'll do. This is the budget that we have. I just don't really see like why this is exclusive to him though. And like Harry Styles like had like a similar sort of introduction into his solo career. Like he had like the same outfits on essentially and had the same sort of you know, like I think his like lyrics were definitely better and had more like weight to them and more poetry towards them, but do I think that they were like really pushing boundaries? No, I don't. I think he like talked a lot about love songs. I also think like what about like One Direction and Justin Bieber? Like they're not saying anything very profound, but you specifically still enjoy their music, you know? And like there was a Reddit thread that said like this hate is kind of like unbased because I hate this man because he sounds so basic and all of his fans are teenage girls. And that hit me hard because like I think that his music is for a teenage like girl. It's like for the bops of the, I don't think it's for us, you know? So I don't think that the hate is valid in our case, to be honest. Yeah, because I don't think the music is for us. I don't think he's for us.
You raise a really good point. Obviously, we all remember the hate that Justin Bieber received in 2009. And there are aspects of it that definitely feel similar. And so I get where you're coming from.
Like, I don't think every piece of music has to say something. Like, even in the same way, like Sabrina Carpenter, you know, she fucking like, oh, actually, no, I don't want to say Sabrina Carpenter because it is quite radical for a woman to be openly talking about sex. So like, yeah, that's separate. But you know, I don't think that every music needs to be radical. Do I think that but I just don't think that I would ever describe him as like a musical genius. But I don't think that would make me hate him though. I don't think he would describe himself as a musical genius either. In fact, he responded to the hate that he got and he said he posted on TikTok. He said, if you hate me or my music, at least have a good reason for it. I just read a comment that said, I don't know. I don't even know why I hate Benson Boone, but it feels right. Like what? How am I supposed to improve after reading that? At least say something valid. Like he low key just flips everywhere. Can he do anything else? Or even I just don't like his songs, even though I'm basing my opinion off of the only one that I've heard over and over, which is super valid. And then he says, I'm literally giving you ideas. So I think like this rhetoric of like, it sounds like cheap and kind of like grocery store music. I just don't think it's exclusive to him, to be honest. And I think also, I don't know how to say this. I don't think I'm going to say this part, cut this part out. But I think there's like this, the level of like the queer community can kind of be very mean. And it's like, only if you have like oppression Can you make music? You know what I mean? Cut that shit out. But
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And I think the point that you made about his fan base being predominantly teenage girls has actually changed parts of what I feel. Mm-hmm. Namely, it pushed me to clarify even better why I hate him. Teenage girls deserve better than Benson Boone. Okay, I'll say it. Harry Styles, as much as I really didn't like the start of his solo career, is more interesting than Benson Boone. You know, One Direction at their peak, so much more interesting, you know?
Why?
There were five of them.
But that is like the epitome of corporate, because they were literally put together by a corporate entity to like sell out and like to be famous, you know, and to make sure that it was like appeasable music. So you know what I mean? I just don't see the difference.
Yeah, totally. So I mean, the role of commerce in music is interesting because it's like there's really good bops that have come out of people with money, you know. Katy Perry's Teenage Dream, my favorite hyper-capitalist album. And when you look at K-pop and the way that the K-pop industry is so corporate, but still pumps out really interesting music. Mm-hmm. I think what frustrates me about Benson Boone is how I don't think there's a problem with music being, I mean, I do think there's a problem with music being corporatized, but I don't think that inherently makes the music bad. I think it can be interesting. And when we listen to it cognizant of that fact, it can be fun and it can lead to genres like hyperpop where we mock that and take it to the next level. What frustrates me about Benson Boone is how, you know, it's like there's kind of this faux story around him where it's like, oh, he's just like an American guy. He like discovered he could sing in 2019. And it's this like, it's this story around him that also really frustrates me. And then like, even though he's like playing with it, like, I wish my haters would be more specific. I'm like, well, first of all, a lot of your haters are being specific. That's the specific critiques that you're choosing to respond to, trying to blanket suggest that your haters aren't being specific. And a lot of them aren't. I mean, I wasn't being specific when I posted last night about him that I hate him. But this morning I'm being specific. And I think this persona that he's playing of like innocent, you know, like all-American guy is so frustrating to me, because in this time frame we're living in a world of Chappell Roan, Charlie XCX, you know, Beyonce, all the like Sabrina Carpenter, Doechii, like these people with like specific personalities, specific intentions, you know, who are offering great things for the teenage girls, Olivia Rodrigo, you know, Harry Styles. And then it's just him who's like, I don't know, I don't think he stands up to the sheer talent that we're seeing on the global stage. I think teenage girls deserve better, and I don't like how much his work feels like a performance playing at authenticity. You know, I have no problem with artists who want to create work which is all a performance. You know, Lady Gaga in art pop, brilliant. Like, it was all fucking fake and we loved it. We ate it up, you know? So I don't see a problem with artists being fake, and I don't see a problem with artists, you know, like genuinely just coming from humble roots. But there's something about the performativity of Benson Boone that fucking sets me off and I don't like it.
I think this like projection of the fact that he's performing something is maybe like something that we're like making up, though, is my qualm. Because I think who says that he's putting himself like up against like Chappell or Olivia or like Beyonce?
Well, his performance at the Grammys when he performed on the same stage as Kendrick Lamar, Doechii, and Chappell Roan. Like,
you're saying that you would say no to that?
If someone asked me point blank and said, hey, Ryan, do you want to perform on the same stage as Kendrick Lamar, Doechii, and Chappell Roan? I would say no. I currently do not have a musical offering that can compete with them. I'm not getting on stage and humiliating myself against them. That's crazy.
I don't believe you. I don't think that's... I'd love to
pivot into a musical career to a point that I can absolutely like claim space on that stage, but I don't have what it takes to compete with them. And Benson thinks he does because he accepted that offer. So fair play to him, but I don't think he has what it takes.
I don't think it's as much as a competition, I guess. But that's, yeah. But that also is like, at the end of the day, he is like a white, like for now, cis, like white, straight male, you know? And I understand that. And then the privilege that comes with that of any person, I understand that, Ryan. I just don't think it's exclusive to him. Do I think that his music kind of sounds like the same as like every other piece of music that I'm hearing like right now? Yeah, I do. Do I think that like, could his songs be made by AI? Also, yeah, I think he does, especially like Mystical Magical. That was for sure AI generated, you know? But do I think that Ghana is like the amount of hate that is like put towards him? No, I don't think so.
Well, but I think you're right that like the hate that I have for him isn't exclusive for him, you know? Like, absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk about about Alex Warren, you know? Fucking hate him. But he's not as big as Benson Boone at this point.
And I don't hate Alex Warren either.
No, but when Alex Warren is on the level of Benson Boone, I will hate him also.
I think you hate that we are now getting to a stage where all of our songs are sounding the same, which a few weeks ago we actually spoke about, and how you said that originality doesn't exist. And so, you know, everything comes from something, and, you know, we should all just kind of, you know, get with that program.
Totally. I'm going to add some more flame to this fire.
He
comes from a Mormon background. We don't know if he's ex-Mormon, you know, he's been very coy about that.
No, we know.
Well, he said he doesn't go to church. Like that, he's not been very specific. Having read the article that was published just before, the big think piece, I think it was with Rolling Stone, he says, you know, about his spirituality, he takes a little bit from some faiths, a little bit from some faiths, and a little bit from no faiths, right? So he's like, he's a mix of faiths, which fair play. But I think, like, not to zero in on the no drinking and no drugs that he does, but I think if individual people choose not to drink and not to do drugs, that's fine. That's good. Good for you. And I don't think it's morally better to do or not do drugs and drink.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the specific climate and environment that America is in, and broadly the world, there's something about not drinking and not doing drugs that I think meshes really well with the sort of Christo-fascist rhetoric that we're seeing growing over there, you know? And whether or not his performance of, you know, all American innocent boyhood who doesn't do drugs, who just loves his girlfriend, who doesn't drink, whether or not he's intentionally playing into that sort of rhetoric, it does play into that rhetoric. And his lack of desire to resist that sort of potential co-opting of his performance, I think is despicable, you know?
I mean, I don't think the same thing at her start of her career, and like a lot, maybe like more so now also, you know?
Well, Taylor's been very blatantly pro-Democrats, which we can critique for not being radical enough, but she's chosen a side, you know?
Recently. But at the beginning of her career, I would say that she was a cookie-cutter country Christian star also.
She was, and I didn't like her at that stage of her career either.
You're getting mad because now I have an argument that you can't argue with.
Look, that, but it's not to say that Benson won't grow into something better. Like,
yeah,
he may.
He's 22, yeah.
But he may. But where he is right now, I despise him.
But I don't think that's very productive to hate somebody and then not, like, that kind of cuts them off to the growth. I think that lacks empathy, and that is an issue in this world.
No, and you're right, okay? You're right, okay? But can we save the empathy for, like,
empathy,
he is a mediocre white man making bland-ass pop, you know? And it's just like, maybe we can save the empathy for people who speak about Gaza and people in Gaza, you know?
Shut your mouth, you know that. Maybe save your hate for open Zionists. I don't know, like.
I think another thing that pisses me off is how, because look, half of the thing with the hate on Benson Boone is that it is just a hate bandwagon, and everyone's just doing it because it's fun. And yeah, it is fun. It feels stupid and light and frivolous to just hate a silly pop star because the world is so serious and so scary and so horrible. I really enjoyed spending last night just getting angry at a pop star. Made me feel 12 again. Made me feel good, right? But then what shits me up the wall even further is everyone being like, no, we need to defend him. We need to protect him. I'm like, he's one of the most famous men in the world right now. A massively global public figure. He's fine. He's
doing
fine.
Are you defending trolling, you know, is what I'm hearing?
Against mediocre white men? Yeah.
I just feel like I'm not defending him as like an end, like whatever, do what he... I have no feelings towards him. My feeling is the hate. My feeling against is like the need to hate someone for joy. I think that's pretty fucked up. And you should look inward. I think you need to touch grass and find joy elsewhere.
The thing is though, I...
Wait. Can I preface this by Ryan saying at the start of... I FaceTimed him and said, why are you coming for Benson Boone? And then he was like, I thought this would be the one rare thing that we agree on as in a friendship. And I'd also like to say that I do hate most white men. In fact, maybe all of them, I would say. I'd say that.
Except Benson Boone.
No, but he has like the baseline hate also for being a white man. You know what I mean? Like, and the privilege that
he holds. You're like, don't take it further, guys.
But if we're going to do that, let's do that like with everyone. Let's do it with Ed Sheeran. Let's do it with Hozier. Let's do it with Noah Kahan. Let's do it with, you know what I mean? Like, I'll do it with everyone then.
And you know what? Yeah, I also hate what Ed Sheeran's become. So I'm with you on that. What was I going to say? I mean, I think the hate on Benson Boone as well, like part of the hate is performative. You know, you're performing being part of this in crowd who's like cooler than, you know, whoever he is. And there is something fun and joyous about that act. And even though the performance may be predicated upon performing hate or hating, whatever it is, there's something beautiful that I think can emerge out of that hatred. You
what?
Know?
Community? I'm going to kill you.
Queer community.
And happy pride. I think that's a good spot to end it on.
Happy pride.
My final thought is, if you could do a flip, you'd fucking be doing flips all over the place. And I would too.
Should we check out?
Hey, Ryan, what's something you're looking forward to?
I am going to go see Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Sunday, which is one of my favorite musicals. It's about a punk singer who's trans, who escaped East Germany and then finds love. And it's so beautiful. And I'm seeing with some friends on Sunday. What are you seeing, doing?
I'm excited for after the colonoscopy when I can...
Totally.
You know, when I can eat again. And apparently you feel cleansed after. So I'm so excited for that, you know?
No, because douching is so important.
And this is like taking it to the next level. You can't say I'm not committed, all right? So, thanks for listening. And if you liked today's episode, tell a friend, subscribe, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, all of the above. And don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter.